my kind of gist is essentially to simplify everything. That's really what appealed to me about rock music, is that you were putting away the orchestration and the fancy violins and the showmanship and the grandeur that typically comes with, you know, being a celebrity and a musician and stuff. And I just didn't want to kind of like really go through music in that route. So I really admired the bootstrappy kind of version of pursuing this music. And so I kind of knew pretty early on that I needed to be on the road, that I need to be in the US or anywhere that would enable me to tour.
Yeah.
And it's like been this constant thing that I've been putting off actually in my entire life.
I'm Trey.
I'm Quest. We're your host for the Truest Adventure podcast.
Each season, we focus on a different theme.
And in each episode, our guest will share stories of how they were motivated to go beyond their self-imposed boundaries.
Because that's the truest adventure.
I just go by Plus Aziz. I really don't use my last name. Probably
Plus Aziz?
Yeah, it's just a mathematical symbol in front of it. Kind of keeps it simple.
So when you sign the wall...
You got to sign the wall.
You got to sign the wall. Because... Yeah. Your signature is going to look dope next to A Money's from season one.
Yeah, and then High Def, our buddy, who, well, that's like the stage name of Markel, who's our buddy, but H triple I period capital D E F. High Def. Well, wait, so what is.
We need better stage names.
This wall looks
like
good.
Your stage name's good.
No, my stage name sucks.
Quest,
bro. Quest is great.
It's great, but everybody got symbols and shit. It's like you're Prince. You're like Prince. You got.
So you know how we were working on the logo for the Truest Adventure?
Yeah.
And we were talking about doing like a compass rose or whatever for the T in the Truest?
Yeah.
We decided not to go with that.
Yeah.
Take that and make that the T in your quest.
That's dope. Don't steal my shit before I can like perfect it, people.
You got to work on it.
I'm sorry, Aziz. Your episode's not coming out for like 6 months because I need time to finalize the dopeness of my name. But wait, you guys... You gotta explain to us how you get to Plus Aziz. Like,
yeah.
Oh, well, it's not a really straightforward story, but it started out in high school.
Uh-huh.
I thought it would be cool to kind of see what kind of reactions I would get out of doing it. And I started doing it, you know, 1 year rolls into the second one. I just kind of stuck to it. Mm-hmm. I think I really enjoyed the way people read into it, though. Like, there's people who think I'm very collaborative, you know, or like I'm always... optimistic. Is that why you put the plus on? Or you're a math person? So it's like there's no consistent baseline. I mean, maybe there is deep inside my head, but like it really came out in a very spontaneous kind of high school moment.
I like that. I like that. But it can be, depending on who you're talking to, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're super into math. Yes. I am.
I am whatever you want me to be.
Right. I mean, that's the response, right? What does it mean to you?
Well, so that's one of the things about songs, right? It's like, especially the way that I approach songwriting and a lot of the people that I admire.
I'm going to call a timeout on the field right now.
Yeah.
Because we are blessed with a little bit of backstory already on you. Our listeners have no backstory. So, you're Plus Aziz, but you are from where? You currently reside where? You do what?
Yeah.
Give us some back.
Oh, man. Yeah, give a little bio for sure.
Yeah.
So I moved to New Orleans about 3 years ago to get into the music stuff here. Moved here from New York, like many other people, originally hailing from Kuwait, the land of Kuwait, which is kind of a really small country that's pigeonholed between Iraq and Saudi Arabia. So I'm Arab. I'm Muslim. I've always kind of known that I have a passion for music. For the most part, you know, because there's no real money in music, I've always been able to get into other stuff that helps me to support the passion. Like, you know, a lot of people from our generation are doing exactly that. So I basically support myself through marketing work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that for quite a while. So I have this kind of like nice parallel of a career that's going on. In digital marketing and brand strategy. And I've worked with maybe three firms in New Orleans thus far, about the same amount of firms that I worked in New York. And yeah, so right now I'm leading Kwaziana, which is a 6-to-8-piece band. We're pretty active. We're gigging a lot, at least locally. We're going to be taking our first trip as a band out of the state in Labor Day weekend. So maybe after this this show or before the show is released. But super excited about that.
Oh, nice. Where are you guys going?
We're going to Philadelphia for what's called Yalla Punk, which is kind of like the Middle Eastern version of Afro Punk Fest.
Oh, this that's is cool. Dope. We got to dissect all of the... It's Kwaziana.
Like Louisiana.
All right.
Okay, would the Balkan beatbox, would those... are you familiar with Balkan beatbox?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think they would be in Philly at the same time as you?
Or Balkans not really count?
So. Oh, man.
The Balkan region doesn't really count, but it's also not that big of a festival to attract that kind of talent at this stage.
Oh, man. Balkan beatbox is like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I've never even heard. What is Balkan beatbox?
It's... We'll have to just play some for you.
Well, I was about to say, what we're going to do is we're going to drop some Balkan beatbox right here.
Just a touch.
That's it. Okay, so we don't get sued because now that...
Because we still Aziz, don't know how much we're allowed to play.
Right, plus Aziz has told us these dudes are famous, or dudes and ladies, and so we don't want to get sued. Okay, so we've got a bit of your background.
Mm-hmm.
You moved down to New Orleans to like tap into the music scene. So like before you got here, what was your involvement with music?
My involvement with music was mostly functioning as a solo singer-songwriter working with a producer.
Okay.
I had done a pretty good job of kind of carving out a little space for myself, kind of leveraging the Middle Eastern identity a little bit, but it was very much so in the singer-songwriter territory, mostly because it's really hard to kind of get people around a concept or an idea in New York. But yeah, I did that, and then I kind of put together a crowdfunding campaign for an event that I would get, you know, a music video out of. Mm-hmm. I would have gotten... a whole bunch of publicity out of it, a kind of branding video.
Mm-hmm.
And at that stage, I felt like I needed to move to a place, a music city, where I felt I could really kind of take the next steps of understanding what it means to be a band leader, which is a very different hat to wear than the singer-songwriter hat. So playing a little bit more of like an artist management type of person, but also really delving into how do you make an organism that's able to tour? How do you support all these people who rely on you? How do you keep them engaged? These are questions that I really wasn't addressing in New York. And I felt like I was looking at Austin, I was looking at Nashville, and I was looking at New Orleans.
Yeah.
And New Orleans just emerged very quickly as the kind of turnkey solution to the situation that I was in.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so when you were in New York, like, was there a genre you could tell us to describe the type of music you were singing and writing songs for?
So the genre is just rock. It's indie rock, you know, but since I've gotten interested in rock again, because I had this kind of like phase in the 90s where I was really into what was happening in the music world, especially with Smashing Pumpkins and At the Drive-In, and these kind of bands were doing interesting things to me. And then I started to see the rise of acts like Sigur Rós and the Mars Volta, which kind of touch on the world music thing because it's like a band from another country or they have some foreign language woven into their work. Mm-hmm. But it's really very much so the audience of indie rock, and they're kind of doing, you know, standard things that any other band would do. So I would say that, you know, just kind of keeping an eye on what was happening in this kind of quote unquote world music genre, kind of brought me back to life. And, you know, because my go-to instrument is a guitar, I'm not really doing anything that's too crazy experimental. I'm not really playing around with too many electronics at this stage. But I started to really want to assemble a group of people that can help me to kind of start to figure out some of that trajectory of, okay, what does it mean to be a world music band today? Where is rock music going? What is the place of the Arab or Middle Eastern or Arab American Muslim identity in this thing called rock? Because I think of rock as, this is a little bit of a tangent, but if you think about the format of the novel, right, as it relates to literature, right, there's this whole bunch of stuff that counts as literature, but the novel is this kind of delivery form that's really able to cut across cultures. It's something that is a very direct way of storytelling. And I feel like rock music is, it does what the novel does for literature, but for music. So it's this thing that, and a lot of people talk about hip hop that through that very same lens, right?
Yeah.
For me, it's through rock because it was definitely something that I could not get a hold of in Kuwait. As you guys probably know, hip hop is a much bigger global phenomenon that a lot of people have latched onto than than rock.
Yeah, like so 2 months ago, I got super into Japanese hip hop.
Right.
For like a straight week and a half. I was like rapping some in Japanese and they were like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Because it translates, right? Like I speak a little Japanese, but not enough to be able to follow all the rhymes.
Yeah.
But I know enough about like my taste in hip hop that I can tell like whatever this guy is saying, it's dope and it's on beat.
Right.
Right.
It's a lot more fluid. It's a much simpler kind of form of expression. The placement of the guitar in the genre and the kind of central place that it tends to play causes a lot of cultural friction too, which you don't get in hip hop. In hip hop, you can essentially grab anything and, you know, make a hip hop record out of it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the very powerful things, aspects about hip hop. For rock, you know, when you look at guitars and the distortion and the certain kind of like visual, verbal cues, it's abrasive. Especially when it's in a conservative culture or in a place where freedom of expression maybe is not practiced to the extent that it is here.
Right.
But that's what I got into. Like, I really don't have any control over what moved me when I was young and what continues to move me today. But yeah, it was like the Gorillaz were doing really interesting things. I kind of caught on to what they were doing. And that kind of got me a little bit more serious about pursuing music as like, you know, figuring out the industry and the business and this kind of stuff.
Which Gorillaz album?
Oh, the first one.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the funny thing too is that it's much more focused on the music videos. Like that was my gateway into a lot of things because I was not able to get, you know, these underground records or whatever in Kuwait. I would have to like bootleg them off of someone, or I could just get online, or I could just, you know, stay up to 3, 4 a.m., watch these music videos and just kind of get that culture in me. So I was, that was basically my teenage, you know, years. I was doing a lot of that.
And staying up like 3, 4 a.m., that's because your parents wouldn't have approved. So you're like hiding out trying to
watch
it?
It's just, that was the time when things went live. You know, I was watching Channel V, not much MTV, but it was, Channel V and VH1 mostly.
Yeah.
And really,
That's so funny. As you were saying that, I'm imagining like, oh yeah, you're staying up late to look at YouTube on your smartphone. No, this is like, we're not so young that we don't know a world that was pre-smartphone. So like you're staying up to watch like the MTV runs of the videos and VH1. That's crazy.
And I was recording them on VHS.
Wow.
So I have like these 16 tapes that capture all the videos that were influencing me over time.
Do you still have those tapes?
Yeah. They're in boxes back home.
That's awesome. That's amazing. That's real cool. That's like one of those things you got to hold on to those forever.
Right. Right.
It's like, it seems like such a stupid thing. And at some point someone might try to convince you to throw them out.
No.
It's like, you got to keep those.
Dude, you have no idea.
I used to make cassette tapes off the radio and you have to hit play record at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Both buttons down at the same time.
Yeah.
And we used to make mixtapes that way. So we'd listen to the radio nonstop. Because if you miss the cue and you press it a little too, it was like, oh man, rewind it. Right. Set it back up. And you'd wait an hour for the song to come back on the rotation or whatever.
And you got
to
be ready.
I don't have a single one of those mixtapes. No, I don't have one of my mixtapes.
What happened to them?
I got rid of them.
over time.
It was like, oh yeah, you got to get rid of it. No one's going to have cassette tapes. Just make a CD.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. I'll make a CD. Now no one has CDs.
Right, I got rid of that.
I got rid of all these like mixed CDs that I made. But I'm like hoarder style now. I have a vault basically of CDs and DVDs. And people are like, oh man, girlfriend is just like, you got to get rid of those. I'm like,
No, you don't know.
One day, right. The DVD is going to come back in fashion.
When they're putting the chip behind our ear, this is going to be worth something. I'm going to go back and play it. Yeah.
The reason I hit so hard on gorillas, though, is I got to tell you this. So I just touched the table. Mm. That's on me. My bad.
Violation. We're going to cut that.
One yellow card.
By season two, we're going to have a new table. That's by the true. Time season two airs, we'll have a new table.
Yeah.
It's a thing with the table, Aziz, because we have very good quality mics and very shitty quality table. So if you touch the table, the nice mics pick up the wobbly table holding on for dear life.
Wow.
Yeah.
So gorillas. I know better than to touch the table. But the reason I hit hard on the gorillas is because their second album came out in 2005, mm-hmm. right? And a big thing happened here in New Orleans in 2005 called Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
A lot of people weren't in the city. I ended up coming back from Vegas to be here to help out with my family's business. Mm. Took a leave of absence. And the guy that I was working with basically day in, day out, his name is Brian. Mm. He ended up only having one CD in his truck. Now, mind you, there's no stores open. There's no deliveries of any. There's no mail service. There's nothing. So he has one CD in his truck, and it's the new Gorillaz album.
Wow.
I am still, PTSD, whatever you want to call it. Just, the second I hear any song from that album, I'm just, frozen going... Wow.
That's something ain't right.
Wow, that's a trigger. That's a trigger. So I hear Gorillaz and I'm like, which album is it? What's crazy is I know multiple people, because that album was huge in 2005.
Yeah.
I know multiple people that were here in New Orleans that have the exact same story with that album.
That's crazy.
The exact same story. Where it was just like, it was the only thing they had left as far as music goes. So they just listened to it on repeat.
God.
So if anyone from the Gorillaz ever happens to listen to this episode, just know that you kind of are the album of Hurricane Katrina. In kind of a good way, I guess, because it's like...
If we have the Gorillaz listening to an episode of our podcast, that's what you want to lead with? That's what you want to tell them?
I guess thanks, man, for helping me not go crazy.
How about, hey, we got this fledgling podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Can you help blow us up?
I'm terrible at this.
Jesus. All right, so... you got the late night VHS recording of the music videos to try to get your fix on this thing that's piquing your interest when you're young. Tell us about, so you ultimately decide to come to New Orleans. You say Nashville's not it.
Too expensive.
What was the other option?
Austin.
Why not Austin?
Austin just kind of peaks in March and there's a few festivals that happen and then it's kind of suburban life. Uh-huh. If I was going to move to, if any musician was going to move to Austin, they should have done it 10 years ago. You know, it's like, it's very mature at this point.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. But meanwhile, New Orleans.
Yeah. Half baked.
Yeah. Music all the time. Right.
Forever. Right. Ever.
And so when you decide, so you get here and your aim is to put together a music group. You move down here with I'm putting together a band.
It started from a concept, which is where the band name comes from. To merge Middle Eastern musical heritage with what you find in Louisiana. So that's where the idea came from, kind of looking at the rhythm signatures, looking at the palettes of instruments that are used here and instruments that are used there, and where can that crossover happen. And then, I have to be honest, It's a long road, right? Yeah. So right now the mix of the two is not immediately apparent. What's happening is there's Cajun music elements, there's Kuwaiti dialect, Arabic language in the songs, but it's not maybe the what I was hearing in my head yet.
Got it.
So the way that it's going to be released is basically I keep the Plus Aziz name and I'm releasing Kuwaiziana for as long as people care to work with me on it.
Gotcha.
So it's Kuwaiziana Volume 1, 2, 3. And just kind of treating it almost like as an album by album installment, because it's also very tricky. Like when you're trying to get 8 people to kind of coordinate all of that, to build the local interest, mm-hmm. To just the it's something that's very porous, as any band tends to be. So it's kind of like I'm approaching it with a lot of precaution, the way that I'm selling it as well, because it came from a very big idea of wanting to fuse cultures,
right,
and to build that cultural bridge, which is so very much needed, especially now. But it's also like you kind of work with the authenticity as well. Like if I'm not finding, like one of the very typical things that you would have in Kuwaiti music is called a shebka, which is like this kind of sequence of clapping that happens between a huge group of people, like let's say 20 people. And it kind of it kind of trails down from the history of going pearl diving and kind of marine activity that was happening before the discovery of oil. So there's like this very ancient kind of form that's still very much so a part of popular music today in the Arab world.
Like hand clapping.
Hand clapping, right? So you can sample that, essentially. Like you can create an artificial version of it. But to the Arab listener, if they listen to it, like they're almost going to be able to tell that it's not really authentic. You know, it's kind of coming almost like you're throwing it as a wedge in this beautiful, in this otherwise very beautiful kind of harmonized ecosystem. So I'm really trying to just focus on the integrity of the music, you know? Right. And it's like, if I want to add hand clapping and the drummer, I have a percussionist and a drummer. If either of them has a problem with me throwing clapping on the track or whatever, then as a band leader, I have to just, you know, swallow that and say like, okay, you guys are the experts in rhythm and percussion. And if you feel like it's going to throw the track off balance or something, I understand, you know, we don't need to do it right now. But the idea long term is to intersect. Like oud is a very popular instrument that's kind of similar to guitar. It's a very important kind of songwriting element in Kuwait and in that Arabian Peninsula region in general. And I don't play that. Like, you know, I have the instrument physically in my house, but for me to pull it off on at a recording capacity and for people to expect it in a live setting can get you down a very kind of problematic rabbit hole.
No, and I fully appreciate that. One room over from where we're recording right now, I have a guitar up on my wall. I only wish it was the case that if you own the instrument physically, that got you the same kudos and swag that it did of being able to play it. So will you tell us, so that we have a good understanding, you've got 8 band members. That's including you. Tell us like who the folks are and what instrument they play in Kuwaitiana. Did I get it right that time? Dope. Because I'm imagining like right in my head, you're moving down from New York with this aim of putting together a band. And what I'm thinking in my head is that this is like the new Justice League trailers where Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne is going around and trying to get Aquaman and Wonder Woman and the Flash to all join to create the Justice League.
It's a little bit like that, but like it's like the Justice League, but imagine like the Justice League falls apart and you have to put it back together. And then you're wondering if it's worth it. And then something happens. It's like, oh my God, it's totally worth it. This is the best feeling ever. It's kind of like that.
Well, we need to hear that story.
So the first kind of batch of people that I found was really kind of focused around an event that I was doing. And the event it was also a very thought-provoking idea of combining live music and yoga. So I worked with someone from Lululemon who has kind of experience putting these kind of events locally together.
Who'd you work with? We know tons of Lululemon.
Oh, Lauren McCabe.
Oh, yeah.
Mermaid.
Yeah. She's great.
She's great.
They're two of the best people in the city.
They're so awesome. So I got the chance to work with her, and you know her. She's like very organized and very goal-oriented and super, super amazing person. So I essentially started working with her and we started planning like 8 months ahead of time, like knowing that the 10th anniversary of Katrina was coming and we wanted to do something special and we didn't know where the funding was going to come from, but we really believed in this idea. During that time, I was working with a handful of musicians, mostly buskers. Okay. So it was like there's baritone sax, there was a drum kit player, there was a bassist. And, you know, we did the event. As the event kind of came closer, I started to get the interest of more people. So it was a big band by the time the event happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, you know, trombone, clarinet, blah, blah, blah. I got a sound guy to come out there and, like, record us. It was very, like, well-produced and everything.
Got it.
But soon after that, the interest dwindled.
From the people in the band or?
The people in the band and people in the event.
Got it.
The musicians that were involved.
Got it.
Just, you know, the music didn't really work for them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was in this kind of mode where I thought maybe, you know, the glory days of Kuwaitiana, you know, had been over.
Yeah.
And essentially, like, was an emerging thing that was really never meant to be in the way that I imagined it.
Sure.
And then I kind of let it drop. And then two people that weren't involved in any of this, really, they were just, like, acquaintances, like, very much so on the periphery, started to come back around. One of them was an accordion player. The other one was a trombone player. And they were just like, no, there's, like, something really good here. And I was like, how about changing the band name, blah, blah, blah. What do you guys think? And they're just like, no, stick to the name. It's a cool concept.
Yeah.
Like, we love it. You know, it's very you. It works. This kind of thing. The music is great. So the first step, as any band leader probably knows, is to find a drummer.
Okay.
So it's great to have, you know, all the musicians of the world. But if you don't have a drummer, you don't have a freaking band. So
I hope this results in Trey and I putting together a band. I think we know a drummer.
We do know a drummer.
All right. So step, I'm going to write this down. Step one,
I think
drummer.
Yeah. I think Campanelli's probably busy though, man.
I mean, if we tell him we're putting together a band.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll leave the Revivalists and come kick it with us.
We don't need a full commitment. People have side projects.
We could be his side project.
Yeah, like Travis Barker does all this dope shit, right?
True. You want to drop in with us too?
I can do backing vocals or something.
Yeah. We've been working on a band pretty much for like our whole last 30 seconds.
Yeah. We're very talented. I am
just
horrible
at karaoke. Just prototype it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
I told you I got that guitar on the wall in there that at least I was able to hang. I was able to put it up on the wall.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. So
found the drummer.
You're getting your drummer.
Yeah. He's from France. Great guy. He's probably the closest. He's closest to me in the band, not only because of the insane amount of hours that we put into performing the music, but also because he really gets me to step outside of the singer-songwriter thing.
Okay.
Singer-songwriters are very bad, at least for me, bad at tempo, kind of like you have something that you do really well and you do it over and over and over.
Uh-huh.
He's very good about pulling me out of that, and it's just like, yes, you're playing reggae, but you're playing the same like reggae style as you were playing in like the other three songs.
Got it. Try this.
Or you're playing the chorus in this specific way. Have you tried, you know, kind of shifting the weight of the beat this way?
Got it.
And see what happens. So, and he's really helped me to kind of structure and make the music structurally feel more like a band. And
Got
so
it.
When you listen to it now, there's a lot of these kind of dynamic things that are going on with the instruments and the you know, it's a pulse change or the weight change or however you want to describe it. So I got him. His name is Matthew. John McCloskey, Soul Train, who is the only local at this point that's in the band.
Uh-huh.
Very talented bassist. He's also the youngest. He's 25 years old.
Wait, did you say Soul Train?
Yeah.
That's like his nickname or?
That's his nickname, I think.
Okay. Well, it was like, you never know.
You never know.
It's
never.
New Orleans,
you never know.
Right?
Like, gotta ask.
Yo, if my man's government name, please report back on that. If his government name is any part of Soul and or Train, I need to know that for life. Because I'm feeling more like I got to do something with my nickname and I got to get that Compass Rose.
You got to get the Compass
ASAP.
Rose.
ASAP.
Quest.
Yeah.
The quest for the, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just real quick, I'm just wondering, so you were talking about reggae. I just want to ask, like, influences or things that you like. Who in reggae, I mean, obviously, like, I'm a huge Bob Marley fan, but
yeah,
probably my favorite reggae song ever, Sweet for My Sweet,
uh-huh,
by Supercat. Have you ever heard this song?
I haven't heard Supercat.
Oh, my God. This song is ridiculous. It sounds a little like this.
If I said I love you, would be what it could be. Because I'm a one of us, and someone up to the world. I am a one of us, if that's only you. I guess the roses are red, I said fight it so good. Nice.
See what we just did there?
This becomes we're trying
to make this so much harder in editing.
Right, this magical button.
It's a very musical episode, I appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We just have like this magical button in the middle of this space above the table, because we're not touching the table, in the air that we touch, and it like then just plays that Ta-da. Snippet. Yeah.
So who do you like? Reggae.
Reggae-wise, I would say it's just like, it's kind of like, it's not really near the center and the origin of reggae, so it's kind of like, one-offs, you know. It would be like, I probably heard reggae stuff through like the Specials,
mm-hmm.
or even the Gorillaz, you know, they have stuff in there that's kind of like reggae-ish.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's this place I remember in New York that was on that corner. It's like a Jamaican corner or something. And mm-hmm. I would like go down there and just kind of listen to stuff. I'm not really much of a collector, playlist, curator kind of person.
Sure.
Definitely very kind of oriented towards the experience. So if I see a music store, I'm going to walk in, I'm probably going to listen to a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And then if there's a music video, that'll usually stop me in my tracks. I'm very interested in like music discovery through video, yeah. you know, which is kind of a thing now. I would say the biggest influences on me is really, yeah, it's like rock music with alternative rock being at the top, and then indie rock, and then world music, and then everything else kind of comes after that.
Okay, cool. And then I got to ask about one more specific person. I'm sorry. I have to do it, because when I was learning to speak Arabic.
Yeah.
So my tutor, she's from Saudi Arabia. Dalal, if you're listening.
بحبك.
Ah, there you go. That would be probably the best way. She's going to be like, come on now. Trey, you missed that.
Too cheesy.
She's like, come on. You, right. But anyway, she got me on for like a gift and to help me start learning Farouz.
Uh-huh. Farouz. Yeah.
Christmas album.
Wow.
Which was one of those like, so she's...
They celebrate Christmas in Lebanon? What?
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm serious. It was one of those albums where it was like, oh, I know exactly why she gave it to me, right? It's because all of these very...
Christmas carols that are in Arabic?
Yes.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And so it was all these songs
that
you know...
like a little bit of a mind trip. Yeah. I'm trying to...
So you know
that.
All of these songs, and it really helps where you can be like, man, this word and that word. Oh, okay, gotcha. And so I was just wondering if, like, you at all had gotten into any of her music.
Yeah,
like, it just seems like she's so...
Yeah, her music is just like the freaking air.
Right.
It's Feyruz and Kulthum are kind of like the biggest divas from the golden age of Arabic music.
Yeah.
So, Feyruz is a huge deal. One of the crazy things, too, is like Feyruz is still alive.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of like these relatively younger rock stars, you know, just recently is like Chris Cornell and the guy from Linkin Park. Like, there's been these people that are like not even in their 50s and they're passing away, you know, so soon. And she's like, oh my God, I can't even imagine what would happen in the Arab world, you know, should she pass away, you know. Which is, I mean, it's eventually going to happen or whatever. But she's like one of these, like, not just a national treasure, but like really just a kind of pan-Arab universal symbol of everything good. She's really taken a lot of people through very rough times. And one of the things that's very important to, I'd like to point out at this stage, is like, you know, Kuwait is very isolated from the rest of the Middle East.
Okay.
There's a lot of kind of ties through Islamic culture, through economics, and kind of the kind of historically where we come from is similar to a lot of others in the Arabian Peninsula, but in a lot of ways, when we talk about the Kefiya or Hummus or Feyruz, a lot of these kind of like really massive achievements that have been happening, it's hard for me as a Kuwaiti to kind of claim any of it. Like, I can comment on it as someone who's from the Middle East, but the Middle East is literally like 30 freaking countries or whatever.
No doubt. I was just wondering, like, her music in, like, any way, like, if you were listening to it as a kid or anything like that.
Yeah, so I think I was reacting to that.
Okay.
So my kind of gist is essentially to simplify everything. That's really what appealed to me about rock music, is that you were putting away the orchestration and the fancy violins and the showmanship and the grandeur that typically comes with, you know, being a celebrity and a musician and stuff. And I just didn't want to kind of like really go through music in that route. So I really admired the bootstrappy kind of version of pursuing this music. And so I kind of knew pretty early on that I needed to be on the road, that I need to be in the US or anywhere that would enable me to tour.
Yeah.
And it's like been this constant thing that I've been putting off actually in my entire life.
Wow.
So I don't think that I've actually had the truest adventure yet.
Yeah.
I think that it's
great answer. We didn't even get to a chance to ask the question.
I like that.
I feel like it's coming, you know, and it's also part of my personality. Like chances are I'll go and I'll come back and be like, yeah, that was cool. Like I need another dose of true adventures, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree, because it's one of those things where it's like we're sitting here and this whole season's on art and thinking about my truest adventure in art, and it's like, man, I hope I haven't had it.
Yeah.
Which is basically my same answer for my truest adventure in running. Which is like I genuinely hope I haven't had it.
Yeah.
And if I have had it, I hope that I am able to have another.
Yeah.
Right. 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 And it's like that, and I'm gonna butcher it because I've been trying to remember exactly how it goes for like the last couple of weeks, and I should just Google it at this point. But Jay-Z has this line in an album that's like, may the best of your...
Do you know this line?
It's like,
I'm waiting.
May the best of your tomorrows be the worst of your todays. Or something like, it's a play on words like that to basically say exactly what you guys are pointing out. Whatever you think the best shit that's happened to you is ever in life today, I hope by the time you get to tomorrow, that's like old news and you've done something even bigger, something even grander, right? Yeah. You lived even truer.
So I'm over here, I'm doing double duty now because Jen is off at med school. So I'm over here working the Google hard. Yeah. And you actually got that quote like spot on, man.
Nice.
It's, may the best of your todays be the worst of your tomorrows.
Boom. Jay, you owe me $4.44. I just put you on.
Okay. That's a whole different topic. But, you know, it came out today, and this is obviously dropping so far in the future that this is very old news.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're saying that his number, right? They're obsessed with, he and Beyonce are obsessed with the number 4444. Yeah. His first explanation of this was that he woke up at 4:44 in the morning and had this song stuck in his head.
Uh-huh.
Came out today that the Standard Hotel, where Solange was kicking at him and trying to get at him.
Yeah.
The address for the secondary address for the Standard Hotel or where that club is actually 444 13th Street, New York City.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. The plot thickens.
Yes. Okay, but look, I want at minimum for us to be able to give shout outs to the rest of your band members. So we got the drummer, Matthew, and we got the bassist, John Soul Train, and that may just be his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then who else is in the band? You got five other band members?
Yeah, we got Patrick, who comes from Chicago, hand percussionist, auxiliary percussion, probably the best musician in the band, with the most amount of experience, probably too. Michael Stalios, who's an East Coaster who has been living here for way too long, but he also doubles. He's a keyboardist, synth guy, computer magic person. I really try to push him towards the direction of sounds and thinking about ambiance and textures and this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he plays keys. And he's also the sound engineer and the producer behind, you know, tracking and mixing and all that stuff.
Got it.
So we've been working on this album for 7 months now.
Oh wow.
It's a lot of moving pieces, but he's kind of leading that. It's the biggest project that any of us have really worked on. We have Dehan from Turkey, and he is a Tulane student. There's another Tulane student, Nick Fie, another jazz musician. So him and Dehan kind of work hand in hand, sax and trumpet, and hopefully the idea is to build the horn section, you know, but those are the guys that kind of know and mm-hmm. show up and kind of reinforce the idea and identity of the band in big ways. Who else? We have another trumpet player that sometimes steps in, Jonathan Risner.
Mm-hmm.
He's another Tulaner. So yeah, tapping that Tulane audience has been huge for us. And who else is in the band?
I was about to say, that puts it at seven.
Yeah, there's the accordion player also. Oh, okay. who's moved
one of the original cats.
Yeah, he's moved to Mississippi.
Okay.
But Luke Coferl is his name. And he's a very talented musician as well. The connection with Luke is a very important one because it's starting to feel like it's a presence-absence thing. Like, we recorded him in the album, and an accordion is not an element that you can just kind of drop and kind of just pretend like it's in the background.
Yeah.
It's very much so something that adds... it colors the music in a very particular way. And I got kind of very fascinated with the accordion through Luke, because I didn't really think I would be lucky enough to work with an accordion player for so long. But it's a very interesting instrument that kind of sits at Mexican, Cajun, whatever Texas has going on. And it's kind of like the narrative of the instrument has really been shaped by this kind of like polycultural type of manifestation that you don't really get with a lot of other instruments.
Yeah.
So what's ended up happening is that I feel like a lot of the way that I'm interpreting the album now, it's like the songs have been written about a certain emotional experience that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at the album as a package, it's kind of interesting because my relationship to the accordion kind of stands out much more so than I anticipated.
Huh.
So what I mean by that is, like, I feel like it's going to be about the accordion.
Okay.
You
like
know?
The particular song, or
no, like the whole kind of overall theme of the thing, because it's an element that we didn't really want to control. So he's there adding melodic bits, he's there adding texture, he's reinforcing a lot of the melodic quality, but it's also like he was in the band and then he kind of is no longer in the band.
Right.
So there's this kind of nostalgic kind of sadness almost that I think is so inherent to a lot of, you know, what it means to be in a big band today. It's just kind of hard to pull off, and it's very modular. You know, one person leaves and you try to replace them, and there's certain people that you can't really replace, but yeah, you kind of can, you know, and then you're figuring out your identity, or at least we are figuring out our identity. Like, can we strip it down to be just three people?
Yeah.
And we're just like this straightforward kind of like rock grunge kind of act, or is it absolutely necessary that you have this big band, this cross-cultural kind of element in order for us to even be worth anything in the musical landscape?
Yeah.
So these are, you know, philosophical questions, artistic questions, creative considerations that I think about, I mean, really every day. And it's going to impact everything from, you know, the morale of the group to the album art to the types of gigs that we can book. To, you know, the type of message that we can get out. Because if it's about something specific, like building cross cultures and cross pollination between Kuwait and Louisiana, then you're not really going to be able to pull it off with a simple three piece band.
Right.
It's a little too stripped down to be able to make that claim.
Right.
But if we're a six piece band or minimum maybe five piece or something, and there's something interesting going there, and because when you have emerging and you have the momentum, then you can kind of cluster and opportunities come. Like, mm-hmm. even if I don't have a full-time, like, fully mobile kind of, like, arsenal of musicians who can play maqam and, like, Middle Eastern music, there might be some kind of collaboration that can happen with the Arab American Museum or some kind of foundation. And then, you know, it's all about kind of setting up these building blocks and trying to outdo the last building block that you had.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, with me, I guess the yoga event was kind of like a big thing for me that happened almost 2 years ago at this point, you know. And I felt like if, you know, if New Orleans chews me up and spits me out after this event, I would be completely happy. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I feel like I really accomplished something here.
Yeah.
But then the next hurdle was this kind of like really agonizing process of finding musicians, keeping them engaged, having an idea of what you're going to go into the practice room for. Keeping that practice space has also been a challenge. We could talk about, you know, all these challenges that like start to arise when you want to put yourself as like a band leader rather than being a songwriter.
Right.
It's a very different ball game altogether.
There's all these logistics you have to deal with. Whereas if you're just singing and songwriting, you show up with your notebook.
It's kind of like a decision making like matrix almost. Yeah. Like I've never had to do this, but I have a project management system that tells me what I need to be prioritizing about the band.
Right.
So, and I'm using Trello right now, which is a really awesome app. There's another one called Asana.
Uh-huh.
And it's straight up project management shit. Like you don't need to really be doing this if you're like a musician artist type.
Right.
But because the ideas are kind of like outgrowing me so fast.
Yeah.
I need to keep just an organized system so that I can keep tabs on like growing the social media presence, you know, the merch, reaching out to festival buyers, reaching out to gigs, to venues locally, like communicating with other bands to be able to have that kind of camaraderie with others in the music world. I'm literally just thinking about like all these different tasks that I have, like putting up flyers, printing out stickers.
Yeah.
It's just like
we dig all that.
Yeah.
Like if we're in the exact same space as we try to build out this Truest Adventure business, of which the podcast is just a part.
Right.
And it's like after we finish this episode, we got to record an episode of us. And then after that, I got like a list of 10 things that like he and I have to talk about before he can leave. And it's like that sort of shit. Like, what sort of merch are we putting out?
Yeah.
Like, what is season 5 going to look like? We need to start thinking about ideas now. Like all that same stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think, you know, we get into it without really knowing, but that's the spirit of the entrepreneur, which really transcends the arts into like, you know, realms of business and such. So for a long time, I was going around calling myself a creative entrepreneur. A lot of people, they kind of look at me and can't really make sense of what I'm doing. They also call me a Renaissance man or an entrepreneur or whatever. So I think it's just kind of the spirit of the times. It's definitely like, definitely a millennial thing.
Yeah.
So, well, you
know, no, it's funny.
Welcome to the club.
You just like went muse level 1000 for me. As you were saying that about calling yourself a creative entrepreneur. Trey and I are adventurepreneurs. Boom!
Boom!
I like it.
Somebody, can you, since you're playing the role of Jenna, can you search that hashtag on IG? If nobody's come up with that and I just created that, we're quitting. I just feel like that's the sort of thing we should be able to sell to somebody.
Gorillas.
Venturepreneur.
Well, that sounds too much like venture capitalist.
Yeah, it's the problem with venture, right? Venture almost makes it sound, you abbreviate a venture to venture, we're gonna have a bunch of people asking us to invest in their startup.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it's adventurepreneur.
Adventurepreneur.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little too long.
It's a little too long, right?
Yeah.
But it depends on how you.
This is your other gig.
This is it, right?
You just saved his ass.
All right.
Yeah, all right.
No, but look, you gotta. It depends on how you spell it. I actually am struggling to spell entrepreneur. That's my biggest problem. Like, I'm trying to write it out, and I don't know all the, like...
It takes a little bit of brain power.
Yeah, like, all the E's and U's.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do that later when I don't have the judgment.
You're, like, simultaneously copywriter.
I don't have the judgment.
A little blank space. Okay, so, to kind of close this out, like, we usually end with asking the question, which is, like, what is your truest adventure?
Yeah.
And for this season, what's your truest adventure in art? And so you've kind of given us a preview that, like, you don't necessarily feel like you've had it.
Right.
For this, let me ask it this way, though. For the space that you're in right now, with all that's behind you in terms of what you achieved, and with what you see as, like, what's in front of you in the short term, what do you hope it is as you look further down the road and kind of what you can kind of make out in the shapes of the long term?
Yeah, so I'm not a particularly political person.
Sure.
A lot of people from my world are very political.
Yeah.
And a big kind of movement that's happening is towards, you know, kind of fixing the media representation and stereotypes around Arabs and Middle Easterners.
Yeah.
And this is not a problem that's unique to the Middle Eastern minority. In fact, the Desi community and a lot of South Asians have been working on this for a very long time. So I guess, you know, kind of looking back towards some of the bands that we've played with, opened for, and kind of looking forward, I would hope that we kind of find our place in that mix, you know, where we're able to be the band that we want to be, which is, you know, 20% political, 80% just kind of good times and poeticism and artistic integrity, and that kind of being a little bit more in the foreground than the political message. But I always want to coexist with these types of acts.
Sure.
You know, there's acts that are very overtly political. They're coming from a very different place than us. And I'm generally, as a Kuwaiti, I'm coming from a place of privilege. I'm coming from a place of, maybe a little bit more Americanized than the usual, kind of like than the typical kind of Middle Eastern person. I'm also coming, I'm not coming from an Arab American background. So there's a lot of frustrations that others have encountered. Probably, you know, people who are outwardly, they look like they're Muslim or they have an accent or whatever, and they go through experiences. I think it's very important for people just kind of collect those experiences and form some kind of unified vision of what it is that we want as a subculture or a sub-community or whatever. And there's a lot of positive indicators. Actually, on August 1st, there's a great musician here locally called Chelsea Hines, who's part of Toonsess, and she's very accomplished as a musician locally. And she just kind of put out this very interesting call to meet in City Park for the music community here to figure out what it is that we want out of our relationship with venues and promoters and all these people that are in the ecosystem. So she and many others kind of sense the fractured nature of what's going on in the New Orleans music scene. You know,
yeah.
If you can say that it's a singular music scene, which you really can't, because jazz and hip hop and rock, you know, they're not really speaking to each other. But I think just overall, I'm looking for the sense of belonging, you know, which I think is something that a lot of people are searching for. It's just kind of, you have to do that groundwork and you have to build those connections and a fan base and professional relationships almost like one by one.
Yeah.
In order to kind of be able to really kind of last and kind of matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, that's dope. Well, look, then, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming through and
teaching
us a little bit about world music, dude.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. Sorry, I got like a little distracted in there and had to pop in the Gorillaz thing and
It's all good.
Geek out on some things.
Sorry. But we're definitely going to follow up about this band we're putting together. Once we get our drummer,
yeah,
then we'll start filling out other pieces.
Cool.
But look, thank you, brother, for coming through.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Listen, Trey. Hey, yuck.
I'm Trey.
And this is Quest. This has been The Truest Adventure.